Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are after 2 weeks of a layoff because Mr. Horowitz was apparently gallivanting around Asia.
Yeah, in a rickshaw. And I did actually go in a few rickshaws.
Oh, yeah. Great. I've never done that. And I don't think... Fun. Yeah, I think in some places, I guess it's an okay idea. And by the way, for anyone keeping score, this is July 19th. DH Unplugged. So you went to Asia for some reason? Did this have anything to do with investments?
Oh, of course. Absolutely. It was investing in my vacation for the summer. Actually, I always take a vacation in the summer and try to go somewhere exotic and or at least somewhere fun, not just the – you know, I live on up in Florida, so it's the beach here and boating. So we went to – this year went to Beijing and in China and then to just 2 days there, and then went to Vietnam for about 8 days. And what a amazing vacation, totally, you know, different than you can imagine from, I think, anything that you would do in the westernized areas in the world. And Vietnam is much different than many other countries. It's more like a Thailand, very, very poor, very underdeveloped in most places. Food is ridiculously cheap. Cheaper than I could even – I've been to some places where food is cheap. This is cheap. I went to – listen to this. I went and I got a massage and there was a variety
– Oh?
I could tell this on the show. So I went to get a massage and I went into Vietnam and the guide said, I'll take you to a traditional Vietnam massage place. So, okay. So we go there and we go upstairs and we change and we get escorted to the washroom and there's a giant – pickle barrel waiting for me, like a giant wooden pickle barrel.
Yeah.
And the guy says, get in. I said, what are you talking about? He says, get in. I said, what's in there? He said, oh, it's tea and some other stuff. So I'm in there in this pickle barrel.
So you they put you in a barrel?
Yeah, put me in a barrel. And
did they put a lid on it?
No, they didn't. They probably should have. But they didn't. And then we went into a tub where they put all sorts of lemongrass and flavors and things of this nature. And then they went into the steam room, where they had eucalyptus and all sorts of things. Then we went to the massage. And the first thing that is, this is a true story. The three of us get in the room and these Vietnamese girls come in and they look at us and they start like laughing and making all, this is true. They start laughing and making all these noises and kind of, and I said to my guy, I said, what is going on? And he says, well, they've never seen anybody with hair on their chest. I said, really? No. And they never saw anybody as big as you. I said, really? He says, I'm not kidding. They're not sure what to do. And my friend that I was with is like 6'3", and pretty, pretty, you know, kind of has all this hair on his back and on his chest. So anyway, we did that for an hour and 20 minutes. Then we go downstairs and we have porridge and drinks, some kind of refreshing iced tea. How much do you think that all cost?
$5.
Oh, you were wrong. It's 10, but that's still, it's ridiculous. $10.
Yeah.
$10. And that is, and I gave a 30% tip because that's what I was told to give. And I felt like a cheapskate and they were thanking me for like 5 minutes.
Wow.
And another quick massage story. I went to Beijing and we had a foot massage. What?
This vacation sounds like a massage vacation.
Yeah, well, that's what.
Well, when you go to Taiwan, look for the barbershop massage. You'll see them there.
Oh, there's very famous. I think in Beijing, there's very famous blind massages. Mm. Blind people. There's a whole. But anyway, so we go and get a foot massage. They said, "Do you want the doctor to come in? Because it's a holistic, herbal kind of place. Would you like the doctor to come in and tell you what's wrong or what may be wrong with you?" I said, "All right, fine." So we're all sitting there, and the doctor comes in, takes my pulse, makes me stick out my tongue, and says, "Oh, you have liver problems." I said, "What? How do you make that of that? Taking my pulse and looking at my tongue?" And so anyway, it was kind of funny, and we did the foot massage for about a half hour, and I said, "Well, how much do we owe?" "No cost." "Well, what do you mean no cost?" "Well, it's China. It's a part of the medical treatment in China, and this is part of the health plan, and it's all free.
Even for foreigners.
I was thinking to myself, what sounds familiar about that? What is that I can't? And then I realized it's like the emergency rooms here.
Yeah, filled with Mexicans.
Right, exactly. They get free.
I know. I had to go to Canada once to get a flu shot 1 year, and it wasn't free. It cost me $40 to even see the doctor because I don't have the Canadian card. Yeah, no. I mean, they have all these systems there up there in Canada, but if you're an American and you have to go to the doctor, you have to pay.
What do you think about some of those pictures I sent you from the Beijing market?
I think it's good stuff. Did you eat a lot of fried bugs and stuff you saw? You had some pictures of. You said you ate cockroaches.
There was cockroaches. There was roaches or whatever they were. And there was crickets. There was fried seahorse, fried starfish. There was sheep penis, which I did not partake in.
Yeah.
There was maybe next time. There was all sorts of very funky things. I tell you, I was really prepared. I was totally prepared, 100% prepared to have something. And then I walked by this area that had a smell that I can't even describe.
They have smells like that in parts of Beijing.
It was absolutely horrendous.
It's like apparently there's like a sewer underneath the area and there's something rotting in there and they can't wash it out and it smells like dead animals.
It was horrible. And I said, you know what? I can't. Now that I've had that in my nose, I can't do it.
Yeah.
So Peking duck and Vietnam, the food was cheap and the sites were beautiful and the palaces and, you know, just really cool place. Hot. Hot, 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 hot.
So do you keep up with the market when you're floating around there with your iPhone app?
Actually, because of the time differential, which was 12 hours, it was very easy to keep up with it. And what we did was we went to this company that had these MiFis. And they had one for China and one for Vietnam where you just pop it on and you have a 3 or 4G access for five people, up to five people. You have an access point.
Oh.
And it was high speed. I got to tell you something. I was down the Mekong Delta in the middle of nowhere, and I had a full signal. It was great. So we were live the whole time.
Hmm. Well, what did you miss? What do you think? You were gone for 2 weeks. The market has done nothing. It's gone up and down and up and down. Every time it goes up, you say, well, it looks like there's all the debt crisis thing.
Yep.
Oh, the debt crisis. Oh, everyone's worried sick about it. Oh, I guess they're not worried about it. The market goes up. They're not worried about it. Goes down. Oh, they're worried about it. I mean, can't they come up with some better analysis of why the market's going up and down other than the exact same excuse looked at from two perspectives?
No, I totally agree with you. It's like Groundhog Day, and it's this replay on a weekly basis. You know, you have a market that moves up and there's profit taking, market moves down and there's buying on the dip. There's excuses because one day everything is solved in Europe and next day all of a sudden Spain is contagion. You know, then the next day you have bad economic reports here. Then you have a good earnings report. It's the same rotation. And it's the problem, John, is that it's so news driven, headline driven and instantaneous that it's really gotten to a point of being ridiculous. So much so that George Soros announced this week that he and some of his hedge funds have 75% of their money sitting in cash because they just can't make heads or tails of what's going on with the market.
That's interesting.
And in today's report from Goldman Sachs, which really had probably one of the most – well, Bank of America was bad. But Goldman Sachs had a earnings report today that was really foul. 53% reduction in earnings, in revenue. A big miss on earnings. And one of the things they said is they missed some of this because they felt that this Goldman Sachs, that they de-risked because they saw a lot of contrary indicators in the economy and a lot of the politics that are going on and the movement of the markets made no sense to them. Now, these are the guys that are moving the markets.
Right. These are the guys with the high-frequency trading schemes, and they're manipulating the market. It doesn't make any sense to them.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to them. That's scary.
Yeah, that is bad.
Yeah, so their stock fell off. His stock is I think at a 52-week low, although it was down about 4%. And then during the conference call, they said that they're going to cut $1 billion, or $1.3 billion in expenses. And any guesses how they're going to do that?
Firing people.
1,000 people.
Wow. They're
going to fire 1,000 people. And they're going to try to save about $1.3 billion. Now, there's a concern that I think Goldman Sachs employs 7,000 people. So that's a big chunk of the workforce. Who are they going to fire? I mean, aren't a lot of the people that work for Goldman Sachs the people that bring in the money?
Well, I guess not. These people would average a salary of $100,000. And based on...
Well, you got to look at salary.
So they have to be just the secretaries and the janitors.
Okay, well,
$100,000 is nothing for them.
Okay, well, Cisco is going to be laying off 10,000 people and saving $1 billion.
So there's
some math on that.
The math on that is ludicrous. That means these people are being paid 10,000. That doesn't make sense. 10,000 people times $10,000 is a billion, right?
Yeah, well, I think probably you have some severance packages you have to deal with. You know, there could be ongoing benefits payable, maybe some charges that they'll have to push back in. I mean, you know, but that's going to be the net effect for them. But yeah, I mean, the bottom line, I think it tells you there is that Goldman guys are paying more, right?
No, actually, let me recalculate all this. I think I'm off by a factor of 10. I think the Goldman people, they're getting laid off. That's $1 million. They're laying off 1,000, right? Yeah, so that's $1 million a year they're getting. Because $1 million plus another 1,000 would be another three zeros would be $1 billion, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Means they're laying off 1,000 people who make $1 million a year.
Or at least $1 million combined with some other expense cutting and benefit cuts.
Yeah, it could be. I'm just rounding numbers here.
But if it's Goldman, I could say that's possible.
And so the Cisco people are making $100,000 a year.
That seems high, that one.
It sure does.
But that's a big part of their workforce also. I mean, we're talking big numbers of cuts here. So there's a big concern that Goldman may have a bit of a brain drain. You know, these people are being fired. Well, who are they and what was their participation in the company to begin with? So there's a concern there. And then Bank of America came in today with the worst loss in their history.
Yeah, well, Bank of America deserves this bad vibe. I mean, they're a terrible company.
And they just keep getting worse. Yeah, but the interesting thing is, it's the worst. I mean, when I say the worst, worse than back in 2009. The worst loss, I think $33 billion in losses they booked.
From what? They're not loaning anything.
No, but it's the bad debt and that they're not loaning, so they're not taking in the money. And that the spread should be reasonable on their loan to deposits, but they're just not doing it right. Consumers cutting back on credit, interest rates down on that. They're not loaning, they're not doing the business, not doing the trading. They don't have the trading revenue. That was a big problem for Goldman. And then, you know, look at the volumes on the stock market. They're very low.
Meanwhile, Apple's making money.
Apple's not only making money, they're minting money.
Yeah. So now there's a couple of articles floating around, which we're probably going to talk about on the X3 show tomorrow. Articles about how I guess the board, they're already figuring out who they're going to hire as the new CEO, figuring Jobs is going to be retiring in the next 12 months. And
started floating around this afternoon that the board had employed some headhunters to start looking for a replacement for the CEO position.
Yeah.
Now, the good news is that in, I don't want to say years past, but in many months past, any mention of anything to do with Steve Jobs leaving would send a shiver down the spine of investors and people would freak out. Now, remember something about Apple. The shares were recently about 320. They pulled back pretty sharply. And right from that sharp move, they just ricocheted straight up. Apple went from 350 to 400 in a matter of, I think, a week. They were 320 to 400 in a matter of 2 weeks or so, maybe 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And what I find odd is, you know, there was this, I guess one of the factors was the Google number. Google had a blowout number, surprised a lot of people. And one of the reasons was that they had clearly advertising revenue, but also their activations. Did you see the number of activations that they're claiming? 500,000 a day?
For what?
For the Android phones.
Oh, no, I didn't see that number.
I think it was 525,000 a day.
Hmm.
That's an unbelievable number. And of course, they have multiple providers, you know, in hardware companies. But they're putting that much out, which means that there's a incredible and insatiable demand for smartphones, right?
Yeah, obviously.
I think that created some a better understanding and some clarity for people that were looking at Apple, saying, "Wow, if they're putting out that," I think three things. So Google's putting out unbelievable numbers. You have RIM getting destroyed, and there's obviously a market share loss there. And then on top of that, and by the way, there's a shareholder lawsuit against RIM to force them to change the CEO positions and do something about the company's situation. And then the third thing is that Apple, with their iPad and with their iPhone, you know, obviously taking major market share. I sent you the notes from the conference call tonight that I listened to. Mm-hmm. And there were some interesting points in there. Number one, Apple claiming that none of the other tablet companies have any traction, or the tablets have any traction but theirs. You know, there's nothing really happening there. The amount of phones that they sold, 20 million iPhones in the last quarter. In the quarter. That's enormous. There's a real concern there'll be some kind of a lull there.
I would think.
They sold out, and I think the number was 57% of the revenue now came from Asia. Hot market. Every iPad that they made, they sold. They thought they'd have some, they have like a week's worth of inventory. And they're just making them like crazy. Actually, I passed a Foxconn plant on the road to in Vietnam. It was kind of interesting checking it out. But Apple's numbers, there's no question that they were significant. I mean, I think they're up 200% their revenues year on year. Enormous. Just, I mean, humongous. And IBM had a nice beat. So we have these big tech names that were, IBM never really went anywhere, just kind of hung in there. But these big tech names, just amazing numbers they're putting up. Just goes to show you the power of the weakened dollar and the global reach of the emerging markets.
Yeah, well, I don't know what to make of it.
In Vietnam and China, not a lot of people had – in China they had iPhones. But in Vietnam, they all had still had the Nokias and all that. There wasn't a lot of going around. So
yeah, they'll be getting on board shortly.
Yeah. Then we have – again, it's the same thing as – this is the same discussion we're going to have, that the iPhone, the iPad, the smartphones, the new mobile revolution – and the changes in technology are changing so quickly and so rapidly that they're forcing some players out. For example, Borders Books.
Yeah.
Tonight announced that they're going to be liquidating and closing all their stores.
Yeah.
I never understood the model of Borders. Help me with this. So they make it so it's like a library where you go in and you could just browse through the magazines and newspapers and read at tables and have some coffee.
Yeah, even Barnes & Noble has chairs you can sit in and read.
And not buy something. If I was doing the bookstore, I wouldn't have any chairs. I'd make them uncomfortable to wait around. I'd make them do something, you know, turn the heat up a little bit so they walk in the store and buy a book and leave. I mean, that seems like a better model than having it so they could lollygag around, reading the books, and then not buying it.
Yeah, I'm not agreeing with you on this idea. I think the reason for the lollygagging is you there's a lot of big books that you want to know if you want to buy them or not. And you want to sit down with the book for a few minutes and maybe read a chapter even and then say, yeah, maybe this book's for me, and then you go buy it. Otherwise, you maybe not buy the book. I think you'd lose sales. And also the other thing about the chairs and the tables and all the rest of it, it creates a bunch of shills. You know, if the place is dead empty because of your strategy, because somebody comes in and they got a sore back just standing around and they're out of there, in and out, the place is empty, doesn't look like it's happening, you're reluctant to go in, it's kind of creepy, actually, you'd be out of business shortly.
Well, it seems like either way.
Well, yeah, this didn't work either, but I think in the other one would have been you've been out of business sooner.
Right. So this is obviously bodes well for the Amazon and the online books and things of that nature. I mean, but you know what's going to happen with Barnes and Noble? We'll see. And what's that? Books a Million, and there's not that many more out there.
You know, most people are buying their books on Amazon over the mail. You know, it's just the easiest thing to do. You go and you can actually browse through the book too, because they have a bunch of stuff posted. And you click the button, and you get a. It's usually cheaper. And if you have one of those Amazon, you know, special club members, you get free shipping on everything. And it's like, phew, can't beat it.
Why not? Right. Exactly.
And no taxes, if you're lucky.
But depending on what state, right? I mean, they're talking about some states are going to have to, you know, to pay up a bit.
Luckily, Amazon's fighting it.
Yeah. Well, of course they would. They have to. So you think what's going to happen with Greece and Spain and now, you know, Portugal? Spain paid the highest level of interest on bonds they issued this week since, I think, 1997, 6%.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of spreading over the Greece situation. I think what's happening now is there is a recognition that default may be the only answer because they can't do anything else.
I don't see how they're going to do the bookkeeping if they do a default.
I don't know how they're going to get through this with the amount of possible revenue that they have coming in and the amount of debt they have with the payments due. I mean, it just doesn't – the numbers don't work.
The numbers don't work for the EU as a whole if they're going to stay with this one kind of currency, and it's – I don't know.
Well, it looks like they're starting to think about – you know, they're coming up with more creative names now, like a temporary default. Seriously, remember, what was the last one?
Chapter 6 or whatever.
Chapter 6.2. You know, what did they say that time? They said, reprofiling.
Yeah, reprofiling.
Now we have a temporary default. So we'll see what happens. And I think one of the best comments I heard recently, I think this was great. One of the EU players said, it's not that we are worried about a plane crash, but more so we're trying to plan when and where to crash it.
Oh,
isn't that great?
That's terrible.
No, but seriously, though, that's smart. What they're saying is, I think, that you know, they know that this is inevitable, but they want to try to set this down in a field that doesn't have a lot of population. In other words, find a time when it's not going to hurt markets that much.
Well, we're waiting.
Yeah, that's true. It's probably sooner than later, but we'll see. They'll probably do it on a long weekend or something like that, when people aren't looking.
Maybe, or with something else is going on, you know, something major, and they can just slip it in.
Right, you have another like major earthquake or volcano or something, like a big ash cloud over the area, and just put it in there and bury it in the news. We'll see.
So, have you been following the Murdoch trials and tribulations with the News Corporation?
There's some weird stuff going on there, isn't there? So I there's something I know you probably follow this, and with Curry, and I'm sure Curry's all over this, right? Tell me something. They were hacking the phones of dead people, right?
Yeah.
What would they get off of that? Was the point of
hello,
that
Jim? You there? Call me back. That's what
I don't understand.
That's what you're gonna get. Hello. You're not there. Oh, okay. Call me back. This is Bill. Call me back. And then leave a phone number. That's what they're going to get. Maybe they get some phone numbers of some friends and call them up.
That's what I think it was. They were getting phone numbers of friends and people so they can get information.
Yeah, because there's nothing on there. Come on. What kind of a message do you ever leave on a phone? It's always the same. Call me back. It's, you know, right. I'm Bill. Call me back.
Right. So I guess the problem is that, one, they have the ability to hack phones like that. That's concerning. Me personally,
they're using the standard set of passwords people use. They use, you know, 1111 for their password, or 2222 or password, or, you know, their last name. I mean, that's all they're doing. I don't think they're hacking in any real sense. They're just hacking passwords.
So people are not beyond using passwords, their password and user as their username anymore, huh? They're still not past that.
With my phone, I have a very simple password.
Oh, that's smart to say that on the air. That was good. Good idea.
What difference does it make? I can't even get to my messages because I can't the password for the message machine, I don't know what it is. So I just let them accumulate, and then they go to voicemail, and it comes over to my Google account. Then it gets emailed to me, and then I can't read what it says because the great Google voice recognition engine, which goes to the computer in the sky, does a poor job. So I have to call the guy back anyway.
I heard of a new
What's on the phone? What is on my phone that anybody would care about? It's nothing.
Right. I think that there's a new app out for the Android and the Apple. It's called Yap. It's a voicemail to text, although maybe you probably won't be able to set it up since you don't know your codes. But I don't know why there's so much desire for people to have
Google Voice does know. Once I hooked it up to Google Voice does that for me, and I can't imagine it being any better than Google Voice. And yeah, and that tells me that this other thing won't work either, because the Google Voice is pretty good. I should go load a couple of these messages and read them back to you. They're hilarious. I mean, it's almost just a comedy act to have somebody leave a message and then you, Google Voice sends it to you, and you go, oh my God, I can't make heads or tails out of this. Luckily, they also keep a recording on your email. And then you click on that, and the recording of it plays, and you can go word by word and see how screwed up it is. But so I don't see that this app's not going anywhere, because Google's doing it already for free.
Yeah. So, there was some interesting things about the Murdoch situation. He was in some court today, and he said it was the worst day of his life. He lost like $750 million on loss in stock as this is going on. But what do you make of this whole thing about this key whistleblower who was mysteriously found dead?
Dead.
I mean, coincidence?
I think not.
Yeah, I don't know. It's what do you make of that? I mean, that's...
What do you make of it? The guy's dead. He'd probably, somebody probably killed him, and maybe knew too much, or he was going to go... I mean, I think maybe the police killed him. I mean, they're the ones that are at risk. I don't know. I have no idea. All I know is that, you know, we will be discussing it on the Thursday No Agenda show for sure.
Yeah, so many major players. Cameron's involved in it. I mean, it's just deep. It was a major. It was one of the major. I think it was one of the assistants or one of the press secretaries for Cameron over in England. That was one of the guys.
Yeah.
Which he was one of the main hackers or whatever it was called.
Well, the hackers were all private detectives generally, and then they hired him. That's the way I understand it. It wasn't like, you know, some reporters. These reporters, especially the ones in England. No offense. These guys can barely turn on a computer, let alone figure out how to, you know, get voicemail off a phone. No offense.
No offense. No offense taken, I'm sure. When it came to the information on the Sunday Post, what was it called? What was the paper called? Sunday
News of the World.
News of the World. This is ran for 130 years or some long, the longest running paper.
160 plus.
Okay, and it was shut down in a matter of days. So they, the information they had, which was probably always the reason why it was so popular, was it was accurate. They found they had some ways of getting information over the years. Do you think it's possible that the National Enquirer is all real too then? I mean, the space alien babies and things like that maybe are true?
The National Enquirer doesn't do that. You're thinking of the Weekly World News. Which is turned into just kind of a joke of a publication. I mean, it's basically a put-on. But I wouldn't be surprised if the National Enquirer wasn't doing something like this. They get all the scoops. I mean, and most of the people in the business, for anyone out there who doesn't realize this, the National Enquirer is pretty accurate. Now, they claim that they get all their good stuff because they buy their stories. You know, they, in other words, bribe people that know the stuff. And but they could be doing something like this. I mean, is it possible? It seems like a logical thing to do if you did it right and didn't get caught. Getting caught's probably not a good thing.
Yeah, getting caught is always the problem. It's a good idea until then.
But I would think that the reason you would, you know, the hack, you're not going to get messages, but you could get contacts. In other words, you know, Bill's best friend Jim, you didn't know he even existed, but he just left you his phone number. So you call him up and you get the story from him. If you know, or you bribe him. And he'll talk, and who knows? I don't know. Mm. I don't do that sort of thing. I basically just ad-lib my way to a startup.
Right. You just BS your way through it, and if it's good, it's good.
It's good. You know, it's just entertainment anyway.
Yeah. I mean, all right, let's see what else we have here. Some IPOs are pricing. We have Zillow, which is the online property.
Yeah, I use Zillow once in a while. I thought Zillow's a pretty nice product.
Yeah. I don't... Who's the competition to that, really?
There's a bunch of competitors. I can't think of their names because they obviously haven't done as good a job at marketing themselves. But there's a bunch of guys that do this. Zillow just happens to be the leader.
Right. And so they priced at $20 a share, and that was above the already raised price for the IPO. And Skullcandy, you familiar with that company?
No.
They make they're one of the, you should, because you're the one that recommended these wonderful headphones that I'm wearing right now. The
Emotives? Good question. Imota.
Imota
Bass Freaks.
Yeah, Bass Freaks, F-R-E-Q. And these wonderful $14 in-the-ear headphones, which are great. As a matter of fact, I've told a few people to buy these.
I've actually bought a few extra ones for Christmas. I mean, these headphones, for people out there, let me get the name because I'm sure someone's going to go, because this way we don't have to get an email asking us.
Yeah.
I think it's Imota. They're available on Amazon. And they were – V-Moda.
V-Moda, right.
V-Moda. And I was turned on to these by an audio engineer who's extremely – actually somewhat famous. I think he's one of the officers at the audio – I don't know, some operation. He used to be a speaker designer for Sherwin Vega. And he was going through all these different headphones, and he runs into these. He says, holy mackerel, these things are fantastic. And then he prices them, and they're like – you know, anywhere between $12 and $30, depending on the color.
Right.
It's the same exact product. Different colors are cheaper. And, there's some $12.95. And you try these things out. They're absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, comfortable, light, easy, and they're cheap. So if you don't care about
comfortable
losing
and
them.
Cheap. Right. Yep. And you can lose them. Who cares?
Right, exactly.
And the fidelity is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, so the Skull Candy is similar in that they do a few things, but they make these headphones. Those are funky, though. Look up Skull Candy.
Now that you mentioned it, some people at Mevio have some Skull Candy ones, especially the big headphones that got skulls on them.
Right. Yeah. All sorts of skulls and designs, colors. They have a cool wood looking one, and they're going to be also issuing shares at $20. I mean, if I was to take my bet, it would seem that Zillow has a product that may be a little bit more
legs.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Skull Candy, you know, it's – you wonder why they're doing – well, they're doing IPO because they get the money, obviously. But the product line, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know if they're going to make the money that Zillow would make. And, you know, especially if real estate comes back into vogue and people start actually buying homes.
Oh, yeah, then Zillow's making money.
Then they'll make some money. Skull Candy is good. It's a novelty. It's something that people want.
Yeah, that sounds like a short to me.
It may be after it runs up a bit. I would agree with you. So gold hit a record yesterday.
Yeah, and that looks like a short.
Gold again, huh?
Well,
one of the problems is silver ran up. Silver ran up from the – silver's playing an unbelievable game of technicals. We put together a chart – couple, maybe 3 months ago, and looked at all the technicals of silver, including moving averages and Fibonacci retracements and a few other things. It's almost it's ridiculously accurate of where you can buy or sell.
Huh.
It hits the number on a Fibonacci. It kind of maybe goes a little bit past, but then sneaks down again. Today was a tremendous reversal for silver. As soon as Obama came out and started, I think it was 11:30, started talking about how they're going to possibly reach a debt deal very soon, and they had this discussion about a $3.5 trillion deal, and without any detail, of course, just a number. Gold and silver made a tremendous turnaround. Bonds started being bought like crazy, you know, because if we get this deal done, there's no default. And silver, I think, dropped 4% in a matter of no time. Or maybe it was even 5% from the top, possibly.
So you don't think gold's going to have this, doesn't have the rug can't be pulled out from under it at 1600?
Hey, you know, regardless of the price, whatever you want to call the price, the question is, you know, what is gold being used for? Who's buying it? So gold is being used as an inflation hedge, it's being used as a currency diversifier by central banks. Now, these are the guys with the very deep pockets. They also have a little bit more patience, so they'll be able to, you know, not have to buy immediately. But they are definitely getting away from the U.S. dollar, and they're looking for other avenues, just like India's doing it, China's doing it, a variety of the Asian countries. So I think I continue to think that gold has more of an opportunity, although I agree with you that if we can put aside some of this inflation discussion, which we haven't seen except for a little bit in China, some in Asia, India, Brazil, none in the developing markets to speak of. And if there is a resolution to the U.S. debt issue, at least that seems like a kick the can down the road kind of resolution, then I think you will see gold come down. Yeah, I don't see any reason why it, you know, continues to move as it's moving.
Yeah.
And then the dollar comes up. If we have a debt deal, and if something comes out of this, the dollar will should move up. It moved up today, made a big turnaround today, and ended up down on the day, but still from the lows, it moved up pretty nicely. And commodities started to sell off.
Well, that'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah.
Well, you got to find some investment opportunities here. So you got on your rundown here, you got Wynn. Mm-hmm. Apparently had a good time. But a lot of people are playing his conference call where he apparently rips Obama. I heard part of it.
Oh, he ripped up good.
Rips Obama. And the thing that people have to note is that he's a Democrat. Wynn's a Democrat, you know, a classic Democrat and supporter of Harry Reid. Not a big fan of Obama. So he thinks he's ruining the business climate.
Well, he's always talked about how he thought this administration was against businesses and a terrible plan on jobs, on job creation. Terrible.
There's a plan?
No. Well, that's the point. I mean, he's really been very vocal for a long time on this. Very, very vocal. And, you know, he's just astonished how incredibly lacking they are in any kind of business acumen. And how everything they're doing is just job killing, not job creation.
Yeah.
Now, of course, Steve Wynn wants job creation because the more people are working, the more they'll lose their money at his casinos.
Right. Yeah, he needs people. I mean, they're just going to kill. I mean, Vegas is in a slump already, even though he's doing well. But I think a lot of that has to do, isn't that mostly because of Macau?
Yeah, it definitely is. It's definitely making a lot of money there. The shares that are an all-time high on Wynn.
Yeah, it's way up there. It's in was it 130, 160, one of those two?
Yeah, 160.
Jeez. I mean, but the stock was like $25.
The stock was trading about, I think, 3% higher or 4% higher on the number. I mean, a big blowout number. And then turned around and actually finished the day down 1.5% on a good tape. So this is kind of what's been happening, by the way. Now, there's some companies that this isn't happening with. For example, Google went up and stayed up, and it's continued to stay up. But we saw Halliburton come out with really good numbers, and in the after hours, they were trading really well. And then they slid down to a zero by the end of the day, or even maybe down 1%. Citigroup was up 2.5%, 3%, and ended up down 1.5%. Goldman was down the whole time. They came out with bad numbers. Who else was it? Alcoa. When they came out with good numbers, or at least, you know, they came out with a reasonable number, and the stock sold off. So this is the part of – yep, the taken. Thank you, Jim Cramer. Is Jim Cramer with you? they're ringing the cash register and taking their profits, and this is a pattern that's happening right now. There's still distribution, even though the market went up today, and, you know, it's been kind of down 3 days, up one day, and the one day that it's up, it takes back all of the losses.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, it seems impossible.
And when the stocks are selling off, they don't sell off. They sell off slowly, you know, down 0.5%, 1%, 2%. A couple of days, so they may be down 3 or 4% over a period of 4 or 5 days, the stock. And then in one day, they're up 5%. Today was one of those days on the board. There was 5%.
Yeah, no, it was huge. Great big day.
All over the place. Well, so – yeah. That's what's going on with the markets and with Wynn and just reversals. And
so back to China, you have a note here that you mentioned Charles Schumer once. By the way, I think it was a good idea, but, you know, Schumer's a showboater. Wants airlines to refund your baggage fee if luggage doesn't arrive with you, of course. And you mentioned that your luggage did not arrive in Beijing. By the way, I always travel out of the country and I always only carry on. And you're in first class or business, whatever you're flying, probably first.
I was in first.
And you have plenty of room to bring your luggage on. You don't need to. You're overpacking, obviously, if you had something checked.
Yeah, maybe.
Not to be critical, but yes.
No. Not to be. I overpacked, obviously, and didn't feel like schlepping the bag with me. And it didn't arrive, which was interesting because my wife's baggage did arrive.
Yeah.
And it was more priority. So I don't know what happened with that.
Did you ever get the bag? Did it finally show up?
I got it. Well, they told me that. When I tried to discuss this with them, they said, yes, come back to the airport tomorrow. There's only one flight in to Beijing from Chicago a day. So come back tomorrow night at midnight, and the bag will be there. And I said, excuse me? There's a 45-minute ride to this airport from where I'm staying.
Yeah.
And I have to come. I'm not doing it. He said, well, I'm sorry. I said, well, don't you deliver? Not usually. I said, we need to talk. I had a little
what airline was this? By the way, you're breaking up badly for some reason. You're not downloading porn, are you?
No, not tonight.
So what airline was this?
This was on American.
American airline? They usually drag the luggage out to you?
I understand that, but I guess in Beijing they don't.
So what how it was resolved? Did you have to go back to the crummy airport?
You just do what you need. You know, you do what any good person would do in this situation. You take out your wallet and you hand over a bunch of yuan and say, "Please deliver it. There's more when you get here."
Ah, good. That's a good move.
So I was awoken at 3 a.m.
Of course,
with my luggage. And that was great. Now, in the meantime, I had a whole day where I did pack some extra things just in case, but I still needed something to wear. So we went over to the silk market.
Oh, yeah.
What a riot. First of all, they're very aggressive there.
Yeah, yeah. So almost everything there, by the way, is bootleg.
Everything, yeah.
I mean, I bought an Armani tie that, you know, that I saw it again. It was a Donna Karan tie at the other booth, and then it was also somebody else's tie. It was a good-looking tie, but it was not an Armani tie, even though it had the label. They got a lot of great – they got some label-making company around there somewhere. They're putting these fancy labels on stuff. And, you know, they got shirts. And, they, you know, the Chinese can make shirts, so it's not like their shirts are crap. But they sell lots of luggage and junk. All bootleg generally. It is kind of a weird place. It's huge.
Well, I went and got, it's huge, five floors or so. I wanted to get a pair of shorts. So they started off that the price in dollars, let's say, would be $30 for a pair of shorts. I'm like, really? I mean, I'm not talking about anything fancy here.
That doesn't make sense.
$30. I said, no. They immediately went to 15. Okay. I said, 15,
did they see you as some sort of a major sucker?
No,
these $2 pair of pants to be trying to sell them to you for $30?
Yeah, they figure that, you know, stupid U.S. guy, American, and I don't know any better. And, you know, so I was told that you go 50% less to start. So she says 15. I said, 15? Now you start at 30, so there must be some more wiggle room in here, I figured. I said, you know what? The guy down there, I didn't know this, but the guy down there is selling it for $7. Seven? I can't make any money with $7. All right, I'll go down there. She grabs my arm. Grabs my arm. She says, hold on, where are you going? I said, can you let go of my arm? And she proceeds to start pushing the shorts into my bag. And I said, well, wait. I said, hold on a second. Hold on. She's got my arm in a death grip. Okay? And I'm like, let go of my arm. You know, I just – now I was more of a principal issue. I really wasn't scared or anything, but I was a principal. I really got pissed off. And now I got everybody looking at me. Okay? And I said, listen. I don't know what your story is, but let go of my arm. If you want to sell them to me for $7, it's game on. If not, I'm out of here. So she sold them to me for $7.
Oh, you could have gotten them for four, maybe
three.
Probably three.
Yeah, three. She was intimidating, I'll be honest. And then in Vietnam, I got shirts that were – they started the shirts at $10 for a T-shirt. $10 they started. We got them for $1.50.
Yeah, they have a big in downtown Saigon, which is Ho Chi Minh City, there's a little area that the downtown area is really pretty, and there's a department store, and you can buy really great special Vietnam T-shirts that have the big star.
Right,
they look like just right really out of Vietnam. And at the store, at the department store where they don't haggle, it's a department store. It's like a Macy's. It's $2 for a T-shirt.
Right, you know it's cheap there. It's very, very cheap.
Well, it's just cheap in China. You just weren't getting, you know, you were in those areas where you don't get any deals. I mean,
I wouldn't go back. My wife wanted to go back later. I said, you know what? You go back.
No, there's plenty of places to shop in China besides that crappy area.
Right, right. But that was quite the experience, that place. And then we finally got the luggage, and then it was, you know, off and away. Lots of fun. So China's actually, speaking of China, when I was there, the guide that we had, and by the way, did I mention this to you? I think I mentioned this to you. Thank you, Ken. Ken, for introducing us to Richard. Ken is a listener of the show, and he heard that we were going there. And we had guides set up, but Ken said, you have to go with this guy. So we actually called them up. They put together a great plan for us, and we went with his guide, somebody from the DH Unplug audience.
Great
guy. And he took us throughout, you know, Tiananmen Square, which it is the, I think it's the 90th anniversary of communism.
Oh.
Yes. It was very exciting.
Any fireworks?
No, but it's a gigantic red round sign with the sickle and the star on it in the middle of Tiananmen Square with 1921 to 2011 in it. Mm. And that was very exciting. But I don't see them as communist over there. It's more like a quasi-capitalist communist thing going on.
Demand capitalism. There's a name for what they're doing, and I forgot what it is. But it's
government-controlled capitalism.
Basically is what it is. It makes it very difficult to compete with them.
Right.
There's a good thing on C-SPAN recently. They were talking about the style of government, which is a very effective in a competitive way. But the problem is because you have a centralized authority that is kind of chosen and then remains in power for such a long time, as opposed to our method, which is, you know, kind of hit and miss, and you never know what you're going to get, but nobody stays in too long, is the real drawback to that system is very efficient, it looks like, on the surface, but you always run into something called, you know, the evil ruler. And they always like to cite this person in Chinese history called the evil Empress Wu.
Oh.
And these people get in power, and then they ruin it. In fact, many believe that Mao Zedong is one of these people. And the Chinese have a history of this. They have, like, they can kick ass for a while, and then they get some creep in running the thing. And the next thing you know, the place is – they run it into the ground. And so it's – right now, they're, you know, you can't beat it, but it's a short-term phenomenon.
One of the things he told me was that – I asked him about – some of the business climate and some of the things going on. And I said, you know, what are you seeing? You know, the unbelievable amount of spending that's going on by the government or has gone on. And he says, one of the things we know is that our national bird is the crane. I said, oh? He says, look around you.
Ah.
He says, as he said,
that's
he
cute.
Says,
yeah.
The crane is everywhere. And by the way, in China and Vietnam and a lot of Asian places, everything has a meaning. Right, they talk to us about the colors of the flag, the colors of the roof. I'm trying to think, what does red, white, and blue mean? What is the red? I mean, they say the yellow means this, the red means that. It's all, everything has a meaning. The greater the lotus flower is the shotgun flower or this or that. There's this whole meaning for everything. And I was like, wow, we don't have any meaning here. That's what we need. We need to have meanings for things. Overrated?
I don't see them doing anybody any good. It's just something to talk about over coffee. Hey,
you know, we'll move to the metric system first.
Yeah, good. Yeah. I'm waiting.
And then anyway, so he says, I said, what is the, you know, what's the biggest issue? He said food inflation is unbelievable.
Chinese are used to eating cheap. I mean, to the point where literally China, I think, and somebody can correct me, but I get the impression that the Chinese over the eons literally expect to eat for free or starve. I mean, if there's a famine or something. But generally speaking, I mean, I remember going to a unbelievable noodle shop. This is a few years ago in Beijing, and first time I've ever been in one. And you get just as much food as you can imagine, you know, all kinds of condiments and noodles and soup and the whole thing. And big group of us left, and I asked the guy taking us to the place, I said, how much did that cost? It cost about a dollar.
Yeah.
Dollar?
Vietnam's the same.
It's like
$1. He said food inflation is unbelievable. He said that vegetables, and he named a few different things. Oh, no, he said pork in particular, chicken, 30% in one year over year inflation.
And apparently they have a pork reserve. Did you read about this?
Yeah.
Oil reserve. They have a pork reserve, and they released a bunch of pork into the market. Is this a gag, a hoax?
Listen, every time in Asia I notice something. You could drive down the streets, and everybody's eating all the time. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
There's people sitting around with a bowl. They're in the shops.
They got those things on a stick.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like a fish cake on a stick is very popular.
Right. They're eating all the time, and that takes a lot of food.
Yeah, I can't imagine what the bill is. Or there's just a tonnage of food that is consumed in China on a daily basis. It must be unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I noticed something on your notes here. I think you get all in upper caps. You don't normally do this. All uppercase, no shoes off in any airports in Asia.
Yeah.
This must have made you feel like $1 million.
I was like, yeah, these guys got it. They get it on here, you know? Yeah, you didn't have to take your shoes off in any of the airports. Now, meanwhile, in Vietnam, nobody wears shoes. They're all wearing sandals, and they take them off whenever they can.
It's now, hot. I know this,
let me just tell you something. I'm sitting there, and there's people in the kitchen, and all I see them doing is rubbing their feet. And I'm thinking, uh-oh, this is not, you know. And I said to my friend, I said, you know what? I'm going to mention this, and they're going to think I have this shoe thing going on still. But it's just – he goes, no, I noticed that too. It's horrible. I said, you know. No, but you didn't have to take off your shoes. They're very – the security is much different. I mean, it's very lax. Yeah, comparatively. Yeah,
we're just like the scare of the public.
Yeah, we're anal as can be over here. I mean, you know, on the way back – now, into China, by the way, you go through passport control. They have these really cool – it looks almost like a giant iPhone that's looking at you, and I think they do facial recognition, and you're in, and they look – you go through, okay? I get back to the United States, and I had to walk over to the guy in charge. I said, are you kidding me? This is so unorganized here. You have these horrible lines. You have nobody – what is everybody off today? What's going on? He goes, I don't know. But going through the passport control in these various countries was so much easier.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. We were very it's like I don't know what the problem is, but it's not a positive situation.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at our stocks.
Okie dokie. Let's get there over here.
Not there's been some activity I noticed. Your Albemarle or whatever it is done quite nicely. IBM's up.
Yeah, IBM's an all-time high. Albemarle, I think, has earnings, I want to say tomorrow night, I think. FedEx has been bobbing and weaving, not going anywhere.
Yeah, I wish it would kill itself, but it's apparently just going to stick here. It's like an albatross around my neck.
Well, you know, it's a good company. It's got a lot of great things going for it. The problem is that the gas prices are hurting it. You know, the input prices are hurting it. You know, supposedly when they came out with their earnings, they looked really, really good. But then the question is arising about the global slowdown. There is a global slowdown happening. There's no question about that. Every economic number is starting to slow down a bit. The question is, are certain companies going to be able to still have the power to, you know, defy that, like an Apple did, for example?
Yeah.
But one of the things I think that happened on our list here is that the shorts started coming up dramatically compared to a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, the shorts look good.
Yeah, there's a lot of
except
green on
for
here.
Cisco.
Where's Cisco?
Cisco's down at the bottom. It's one of my picks.
Hmm, that's interesting.
Of course, it's basically neutral. Hasn't done much, but it's not performing.
Well, and tomorrow there could be some problems. There was a... You got a good number from Apple. You had a good number from IBM. You had a horrible result from some of the cloud companies that may happen. I mean, you saw some of them do okay, but Riverbed was down about 28% after hours tonight. Hmm. They had a slight guidance letdown, and that spilled over to F5 and to a couple other companies in that genre. But JCPenney, the joint pick, the purple pick, We were all over that, weren't we?
Yeah, I think we nailed
all over
it.
That. Yep, all over that one. And then General Motors is just slogging along very nicely. And actually, if you look at that, if you recall a few weeks ago, your ARM Holdings and Intel, they were really way off, remember?
Yeah.
And they came back nicely, so that's good. So generally speaking, I mean, it's been going well. Crude was up about 10%. Now it's a little bit down. Bridgepoint Education definitely broke out. Look at Crocs up another 4.5% today. Silver was up 7% today, but we got stopped out of it. It was down about $1.50 from where it is now, but we stopped out a few days ago. And Friend Finder keeps on, you know, being unfriendly to any of the investors.
That's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, you know, that's going to obviously – now that Google – do you like the Google Plus, by the way?
I've been using – I use it mostly to follow other people. I mean, I haven't been posting on it. I do have a you can find me under John – Dvorak, John C. Dvorak, and I have it's a smudge for a picture, so if you see the smudge, it's me. And I don't know. These things, you know, don't do much for me. It looks like a grant. It seems more like Twitter than Facebook, and it's got, everybody's kind of flocking, all the insiders are kind of, you know, the digerati are all flocking to it. And I don't know that it's valuable. It's kind of similar.
I think it has an eerie similarity to Facebook.
No, it's very. They try to copy Facebook, but there's a lot of things Facebook doesn't do.
Right at this point, but they're very successful at it.
And you can't unfriend, which is like a feature.
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, you can, but you don't get this big announcement. Does it? You can't humiliate people using the system.
That's awful. And what's the point of unfriending if you can't humiliate somebody?
Oh, no.
I signed up for it just to check it out and see what it was like. And all these people, you know, have been requesting me. And I think you're the only one I put on there.
Oh,
thanks. That I accepted. Yeah, no problem. But I don't see, I don't know. The new redesign of Google has it on there, but I.
Well, anyway. So let's take a look at what you're picking. You've got some new stocks here.
Mm-hmm. So Zag is a name. We've had this on before.
You keep hoping for this.
It's at a high. It's doing very well. It had that one blip when Apple came out last quarter and announced their new case for their iPhone, the magnetic cover.
Yeah.
And the stock went down, I mean, fast, like 30% in a second. And then it started to come back and the numbers were good. And now the fact is, I think that with all of the iPhone and the iPad sales, this is actually good for Zag. Zag has been moving very nicely lately. It's at 15 or so, I think it is.
So I'm looking at maybe jumping back into Camac Energy.
Oh, come on. Really? Oh, that would be such a good idea.
Well, it's just... No, not. You did get into Gulfport.
Yeah, Gulfport is the number one stock on our screener that
really?
We use.
Yeah.
And it's for two reasons. Number one, we've been out of this a few times. It moves fast. And... It's the energy plays have been very hot lately because there's been some takeover issues. There's been some, you know, rising prices of gas. Crack spreads have been very good in the refining area. So there's been a lot of good things happening there. And Gulfport, there's a few names in this genre, but Gulfport has great fundamentals. And if you look at the stock pattern, so our scoring goes by both fundamentals and technicals. If you look at the pattern, I mean, everything is just agreeing with it right now. And it broke out actually yesterday and the day before on volume, but it's still within buying zone. So it's going to be a volatile stock. It's energy stocks usually are, but number one on our list, I thought it was worthwhile taking a piece of this.
Yeah, let's see what happens. I got nothing.
Nothing. I mean, I think you're going to see this continuation of this on again, off again schizophrenic market. Where one day it's hot, the next day it's not. You're going to see energy moving around.
Right, and all the pundits on the air, you know, are going to attribute the up to the same thing. They're going to attribute the down. Same rationale. Well,
right.
It went up because of A. It went down because of A. I mean, come
right.
on.
Listen, what do you attribute today to? Today was IBM's earnings were good, really good.
I think it's just
good.
All earnings. I think they discounted the – I think they've caught, you know, this bluff, this is something I'm going to talk about. Do you remember back in 95 when the government, we didn't raise the debt ceiling, we didn't do anything, and then the government was actually shut down for a while? Remember the government shutdown?
Yep.
How is that different than what's going on now? Why is it all of a sudden we're going to go into worldwide default? That was never even brought up back in 95.
When Clinton
was the president. And meanwhile, Clinton comes out and blows kind of – comes out with a bunch of bull crap about how if he was the president, he would go to the Constitution and he'd just raise the debt ceiling with anybody liked. What did he do back then? He didn't do anything. I mean, when he was the president, I mean, these people are all full of crap.
Well, I think now the difference is that, first of all, Geithner and Bernanke have been very vocal about if you don't raise the debt ceiling and there is a default, first of all, we have a lot more debt right now. We have a lot more countries that are buying our debt at enormous numbers, although the last tick flows were not as good. So there's a lot of countries not buying our debt, which can you blame them? And so I think that there is this whole idea that a default at this point, especially in the environment where you have the European default issue, it just has a whole different mood to it. There aren't many, you know, before there were options. You know, there were no options. You just, you know, come to the U.S. and that's it. Now there's more options, and there's a lot of countries that are very vocal about it. So I think China's pissed off at us anyway. So what are you going to do?
The whole thing's theater.
It is. That's exactly what it is. I agree. And the whole point is that I think all these default talks are a bluff. Well, not the default talks, but the talk about Armageddon are bluffs to try to get a quicker resolution to all this. And the problem is, I mean, Obama was talking about how if we don't get this deal done, Social Security checks aren't going to go out, right?
which is a blatant lie.
I don't understand that. I thought Social Security was from a different fund.
It is, and it's a blatant lie. Even though it's, with some people argue, well, the social, it is from a different fund, but there's a bunch of IOUs in there because apparently Congress has borrowed money out of the Social. They still have to pay it. There is a cash flow. The country has a cash flow, no matter what anybody wants to say. And the Social Security checks have to go out by law. And unless the guy wants to get impeached.
Yeah, I don't understand that. And then talking about how, if we don't get this, then this is going to be just a shutdown and all this is going to happen. I mean, there may be a shutdown and there may be people out. Remember, what are the post offices closed for a while?
In California just recently. I mean, we have that all the time here, actually. It happens every so often. They shut down the state.
It's like a power outage.
Yeah. A rolling blackout.
But it's like, it's even like earthquakes. Everybody gets used to it in California.
Well, you never get totally used to it because they don't happen that often. That's the irony of earthquakes. I mean, we had one the other day. A little one nearby. It was like a couple of miles from the house, so it was only a 3-something, but you could feel it because it was so close. Right. And it sounds like the typical earthquake where I live, it sounds like a truck just ran into your house. Exactly. Mm-hmm. If you imagine a truck driving off the road and then banging into your house, just crunching right into it, that's what the earthquake feels and sounds like.
Let me mention something, that the stocks that we talk about here are not recommendations to buy or sell anything. And, of course, all stocks or investing carries a significant degree of risk. You need to do all your own research in order to make a good and a proper decision. So don't take our recommendations for anything.
Right. Just take a look at CAMAC Energy and so you can see how well I did. Only lost 40%.
It could have been worse. Think of it that way. Yeah, I have a question for you.
Folded.
How are you enjoying your hybrid, your car?
Oh, you mean no? I've been testing, and I will have a report available for like 99 cents or $1.99. I think I'm going to sell it. Because I had these cars. I had a Volt, and I had it for over a week, and now I just got over having for the last while you were gone. I was driving a Leaf.
Oh. How do you like that? Well, just give me the headline.
I like both these cars, actually. The Leaf I liked a lot, but the Leaf is less practical because it's, once you're out of your 90-mile range, you're dead in the water. And although it does have a 440 charging capability, so you can charge the thing up from scratch in like a half hour. But these cars are interesting. And the thing is, I finally did the calculation because the Leaf tells you what kilowatt hours you used in terms of mileage, and you can back calculate it. So you can go about 100 miles on $4 worth of electricity.
Wow.
And if gasoline is $4 a gallon, that's the equivalent of 100 miles to the gallon of gas. Right. So I call it the equivalency. And so I did a calculation on the life of the car and all the rest of it. But for a car that gets 100 miles to the gallon, which essentially is what this is, and it actually would increase if the price of gas went down in terms of equivalencies, these things are zippy. And that little Leaf is a bomber. You can really, it's fun to drive. You just zip around, and it's very roomy. It easily holds 5 people, no problem.
Wow. Hey, well, I guess that in those cars they have the little kilowatt meter like we have at the house somewhere in there.
Something like that.
Spinning around the whole time.
No, it's got a little thing. It's got a little gauge. So when you punch it, you can see. Oh, you're using juice here. And then it comes. It's got a whole bunch of electrical gauges that tell you what percentage of the battery is filled up, how many miles you can expect to go, and all the rest of it.
Right. Neat. Well, I think that's a wrap.
Yeah. We'll talk again next Tuesday, hopefully, if all goes well. And I'm glad you're back safely.
Thank you. I got to send you the videos of me crossing the street in Vietnam.
Oh, Vietnam is the unbelievable. That's the – we didn't bring – we might as well discuss this before we go because it's one of my great memories. Vietnam, the way you cross the street in Vietnam is you just slowly, because I watched old ladies do this. Exactly. Tell me I'm not right. You slowly, there's like, we're talking 6 lanes of traffic going every which way at high speeds on motors, mostly on scooters and cars and cabs. Slowly, and there's no crosswalk. You're in the middle of this huge street going.
And there's no light. There's nothing.
And you just slowly walk into the street, very slowly. And walk slowly across the street, and they zoom around you.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's hilarious.
We stood in. They said, this is what you're going to do. We're going to cross at the same time, and we're going to make a line going from right to left. And the guide said, when I walk, you walk.
Yeah.
When I stop,
he's just
you
showing
stop.
You how to do it. Once you do it a couple of times, you get used to it.
Yeah. The first time was scary because, you know, you feel the wind of the.
Oh, yeah. No, they zoom right by. The car will go by you at like 35, 40 miles an hour, right with a foot away from you.
Exactly.
Right
exactly.
By.
Exactly. It's organized chaos.
It's but you watch these old women doing it, and you go, well, you know, I guess I can do that too. And yeah, you would walk it so you'd be parallel to the street when you walk as a group. You'd walk across, as opposed to like a single file.
Oh, definitely
then,
not.
Then you'd get killed, obviously. Right. But
11,000 people a year get killed by accidents being hit by motor scooters.
Yeah, the scooters are the danger. I mean, those guys are maniacs.
That's because they have not only five people on a three-person scooter, but they also put, for example, that's how they transport things. So they have boxes all the way up on the back, all the way up in the front, and then a box right in front of them between them and the handles.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an unbelievable thing to watch. So some of them have long lumber boards that they're tracking with them.
Yeah, no, it's wild. It's wild and woolly. But yeah, walking across the street. Anyway, all right, so we'll talk again on Tuesday and maybe more ribald tales about Asia.
Oh, I have plenty. I'll see you then.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.